This is an ABC podcast.
There was somebody suspected of having illicit diamonds in Europe, and there were illicit diamonds in Perth. There's got to be a connection.
He was not one bit concerned about the origins of any diamonds.
Then he said, I want you to scrub it, I want you to kick a couple of doors in and write it off. Something definitely very wrong.
They were stolen. I'd recovered them, and they were going to stay recovered.
Someone's been paid to take me out.
It struck me that while looking into this mystery, it's actually very much like diamond exploration itself. When you're exploring for diamonds, you find one little grain that indicates there's something bigger around the corner, and geologists keep chasing it until they find the source. It's the same with this story. Everyone I talk to leads me to another little nugget of truth. It's hard to put the whole picture together, but there's one common thread. Greed. We heard in the last episode that our less than smooth criminals got caught. It was not some old-fashioned Agatha Christie type sleuthing that finally brought the scheming trio down. It was a failed love affair. Now we're going to learn how Argyle and the police actually circled around them for years. 4 years, in fact. But given we know they weren't the most sophisticated crims, why was it so hard to pin them down? In this episode, we find out what went pear-shaped in the police investigations, which helped our crims avoid being pinged for the crime for so long. I'm going to put my dear stalker hat on and play Sherlock Holmes to see how this case was cracked. I'll sit on the shoulders of the investigators who are chasing down the leads of how the diamonds were stolen. First up, Argyle Security gave it a go. Then, when the police got involved, it all got very murky. So much so, Argyle eventually called in a private security firm. This episode, as we follow the investigations, we'll learn about alleged police corruption and the dodgy diamond trade, the connection between the glitzy world of gems and the criminal underworld. I'm Sinead Mangan. This is Pink Diamond Heist, Episode 4, How to Catch a Thief. Our story starts in Europe.
Part of my job, as you must accept, is intelligence gathering, which is why I value the contacts I've made around the world, both with the police and security establishment.
That's Richard Corfield, the man in charge of security for all of Argyle's diamond operations. We heard from him in the last couple of episodes. He's in his 80s, but could remember this time 30 years ago clear as a bell. I spent the good part of a day with him in hospital where he was recovering from surgery. This didn't stop him telling me his story. He told me about when he was in Europe sussing out the diamond trade for Argyle. Richard Corfield has lived a big life. He hailed from Scotland Yard and eventually set up security at what was then the world's biggest diamond mine in the Kimberley of Western Australia. As part of his Argyle job, he developed contacts with people working all through the diamond trade in Europe. He made it his business to know the jewellers, the cutters, the traders, everyone who handled diamonds as they moved from the mine through the diamond chain to Antwerp. He kept a close eye on the movement of Argyle's highly valuable diamonds. He made several trips to Europe to do this reconnaissance work. Then, back in Perth, Australia, he heard out of the blue from one of these European jewellers.
One of them phoned me one day from Antwerp. He said, do you know about this explorer? I said, which one's that? And he said, oh, he's got some stones that look like yours. I said, are they polished or rough?
The thing is, unpolished or rough pink diamonds shouldn't be available on the streets of Europe. Argyle polished all pink diamonds in Perth.
And he said, oh, there's a couple of polished ones, but not very well, and the rest are rough. And he's trying to develop some sort of contact with jewellers here for himself. I said, has he got a name? He said, no, I haven't got a name, but I know he's here.
And what, he was called the Explorer?
Explorer. I have good reason to believe that it was Mr. Rodden.
That's our Lindsay Rodden, the mastermind of this crime. And then this contact in Europe drops a bombshell.
He said, yes, I've heard that there's some Argyle material about, but I haven't seen it. I'll let you know. I will keep your nose to the ground because it could be important.
What he's talking about here are rare pink diamonds.
And some of it turned up. And I got the bloke in Antwerp to consign it to us, and we paid the whole lot for him. And we took him there, and they took him to the sorting room, and there are some of these diamonds.
So this was the first time Argyle's investigator had heard about there being this mystery explorer, a.k.a. Lindsay Rodden, mixing with the diamond trade in Europe. This is Richard Corfield's first hunch that there's a leak in the passage of Argyle diamonds. He continues to push on his contacts in the industry and gets a lead closer to home.
You had this inkling, but you'd heard that there was possibly...
Yes, but what happened out of that was, when I was talking about cutting diamonds, they said this bloke, who's a South African resident of Perth, had a little cutting works, and he had got some diamonds.
So he visits the Perth Diamond Works, a small diamond cutting outfit in Fremantle, and meets a man by the name of Noel Newton. At the shop, Noel polishes rough diamonds into the kind of sparklers you see on an engagement ring.
And I went round to see him, and I said, you don't cut polishing? Yes, he said, yes, I've got some. They come from Switzerland, I think. I said, can I have a look? And he said, sure. And he got the envelope and tipped them out. And there was bloody Argyle dust dropping onto his table. They were dirty diamonds. I said, they're Argyle diamonds. He said, no, they're not. I said, they are, and what's more, I've got reason to believe that they've been stolen.
Why would diamonds from Switzerland have red Australian dirt on them? And so the plot thickens for Argyle's investigator, Richard Corfield. He's found diamonds that haven't been through the mine's official cleaning processes. Lindsay Rodden had dropped off some of his stolen diamonds to get polished so he could sell them on the jewellery black market. But Richard Corfield had intercepted them.
So what's whirring around in your brain right then? So you've had this phone call to say
that. Oh, yes, I knew that there were two things. That there was somebody suspected of having illicit diamonds in Europe, and there were illicit diamonds in Perth. There's got to be a connection. There had to be.
Realising now he had unexplained pink diamonds in both Europe and Perth, Richard Corfield rings a high-ranking officer to tell him that he suspects both lots have been stolen from the Argyle mine deep in the Kimberley.
I phoned the police. Is it urgent? I said, it's important. It's not really urgent because I've got everything. I've got these. I said, I've got a chain of possession. I couldn't get coppers interested enough.
The lack of police interest didn't throw Richard Corfield off the scent. He went back to Noel Newton's cutting shop and borrowed five of the suspect pink diamonds that Lindsay Rodden was waiting on. His plan was to test to see if the rough diamonds had come direct from the Argyle mine. But before he got round to that, the man known as the explorer, Lindsay Rodden, calls Noel Newton's diamond cutting shop. Lindsay Rodden had dropped off the stolen pink diamonds a few days before to get them polished, ready for sale in Europe and Australia. Little did he know that Richard Corfield was in the wings waiting to swoop them off for testing.
The next morning would have been 9 o'clock, just after 9 o'clock. The telephone rang, and it was Lindsay Rodden on the telephone. And he said to me, what are my stones doing at Argyle? Well, you could have hit me with a baseball bat. I just had no answer to him.
Noel Newton spoke to the ABC's Four Corners programme in the mid-90s.
He knew before the stones were returned to me that the stones had been given to Caulfield and they were at Argyle. So he obviously has got connections somewhere around there.
Very good inside knowledge.
Well, he would have to have, between closing time virtually as when Dick Caulfield left, to 10 o'clock the next morning, he knew that I'd given Dick Caulfield those stones for analysis.
Did Rodden ever boast to you of connections that he had within the police force?
He boasted that he was very well connected. Nothing went on that he didn't know about.
Just a quick note, there's no suggestion that Noel Newton knew the diamonds were stolen before Caulfield approached him. Now back to my chat with Richard Caulfield. It might seem pretty weird that after intercepting diamonds stolen from the mine, he returns them. Essentially, he doesn't want Rodden to think the jig is up. But little does he know how connected Rodden is.
And then he phoned. This bloke phoned me and he said, he knows you've got my diamonds. I said, who does? And he said, Rodden. It's the first time I got the name.
So Noel Newton called you and said, he knows you've got my diamonds.
Yeah. What am I going to do? Because he wants them. I said, what's he going to do with them? He said, he just thinks you've got them. I hung out, I've got them. He got this thought in his head. I said, oh, that's bad, but I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll bring them back. I'll give them back to you. And you give me my receipt back. And I will then leave them with you, but I want them back. Don't think you're going to lose them.
So Richard Corfield slipped the diamonds he'd borrowed for testing back to the jewellers just in the nick of time.
Anyway, he phoned me about an hour later. He said, Rodden's been in. He said he wanted the diamonds. I showed them to him. And he said, well, that's bloody strange. It's not what I heard. And then he left.
Quick as a light, Richard Corfield told the jeweller he was on his way to grab the diamonds back again.
So I got the diamonds back.
Why did you want to get them again?
Me? I didn't want to lose them because they were mine. They were stolen. I'd recovered them and they were going to stay recovered.
How did Lindsay Rodden know that his pink diamonds had been confiscated from the jeweller by Argyle? Who tipped him off? Richard Corfield gets the confiscated diamonds tested. It turns out they're all from the Argyle mine.
And this put the wind up the polisher and he was terrified of Rodden. A lot of people were, you know, I don't know why. He was an insignificant little peanut, really. You know, the staggering thing about it was the length of his nose. He got a nose out there.
Richard Corfield was very animated when he was describing Lindsay Rodden. It was the first time anyone had described to me how Lindsay Rodden looked. It was quite funny. The only photos I'd seen were all from old, scratchy newspaper cuttings.
I'd never heard of him till this bloke splurted his name out over the phone.
So Richard Corfield puts two and two together. He's confirmed the pink diamonds were stolen from Argyle. So now he has proof Lindsay Rodden had his hands dirty in Perth, but also he's been seen around Europe peddling Australian pinks. Finally, the police put a detective on the Argyle case. So this is the start of police investigation number one, 2 years after Barry started to steal diamonds from the mine. Robin Thoy was the officer in charge of this first investigation into the missing diamonds. I was delighted he agreed to chat with me on tape because he's a major police whistleblower. I spoke to Robin Thoy on a landline from a remote part of Tasmania where he escaped when this case led to death threats. We'll get into that in more detail later. Robin Thoy recalls Lindsay Rodden clearly after all these years.
He was a charismatic sort of fellow, super bright, but had no conscience. Absolutely none. Couldn't give a damn what he said, how he said it, why he said it.
Until this case came across his desk, Robin Thoy had never heard of Lindsay Rodden. But when he looked him up, he found he had connections with the drug scene in Perth.
Drug squad said never heard of him, blah, 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 blah. And yet there's evidence everywhere that he was involved with the drug and jewellery scene.
Despite Lindsay Rodden being a known person to the police, Robin Thoy said from the start, his colleagues were very dismissive of Rodden's connection with the suspicious diamonds. He feared the cops themselves were thwarting his investigation. Now, unbeknownst to our sleuths, they're about to make a major mistake. They let people on the Argyle mine site in on the investigation. Robin Thoy asked Richard Corfield who of his security staff at the mine he trusted. Richard Corfield is the elderly gentleman we've heard a lot from earlier in this episode. Guess who Richard Corfield chose? Barry Crimmins, our man on the inside. Barry didn't just hoodwink Richard Corfield. Everyone I've spoken to from Argyle have said they'd no inkling that Barry was dodgy. He was a former cop after all. So if you were part of a diamond heist and the police were sniffing around, you'd be pretty stoked to be brought into the inner circle of the police investigation. And now Barry Crimmins can feed the intel back to his partner in crime, Lindsay Rodden. The first time Robin Thoy met Lindsay Rodden was one you'd never forget. Soon after he was put on the Argyle case, he got a warrant to search Lindsay Rodden's house.
And I'll tell you now, the interview was a little bit more different than I've ever had before. He wouldn't talk anywhere except in the toilet.
What?
In the ensuite. So come on here, guys, we'll have a talk. And I said, what?
This is when you were searching his house, Robin?
Yeah, you know, I sat down and talked to him, and I sat on the toilet pan.
And where did he sit?
He stood up near the sink. And, it's the first time I've ever done that. So I then knew immediately that he knew he had put in a listening device. He was expecting us, and he knew it had a listening device in there.
By now, Robin Toy feels certain that Lindsay Rodden had police connections. So our thieves both now know what the police know. And the officer running the investigation doesn't understand why he can't get traction on the case. He feels like he keeps getting pushback from his superiors.
And we found this stuff was going to a fellow by the name of Horowitz in Switzerland.
Horowitz is that major gem trader we've heard a fair bit about. So it's a big deal for this police officer to discover that Lindsay Rodden in Perth is dealing with such a big overseas player in the diamond trade.
But we couldn't prove that they were stolen or by who. So they started pushing me around. The superintendent's favourite word was, at the end of the day, what are you going to get? And I said, I've been on it for 2 weeks, I wouldn't have a clue. We can't find the nectar. So what do you want me to say? And he said, well, I want you to write it off. I said, well, I'm not going to write it off. He said, charge him with unlawful possession and write it off.
When I spoke to Robin Thoy from the depths of Tasmania, he told me he then did something that was pretty extraordinary for a police officer. Robin Thoy decides to start secretly recording his police officers, including his superiors. At this point, he says he's been getting violent threats, which he thinks comes from Lindsay Rodden and his associates.
They were going to firebomb my wife's shop at one stage while we're all in there, including my daughter. They weren't messing around. If I hadn't taken those tape recordings, I think I might have got hurt.
So Robin Thoy, when he was investigating the Argyle case, started to record his fellow police officers because he was pretty sure his investigation was being thwarted. Now, it turns out these tapes still exist. Robin has them, and I'm just about to drive to get them. Robin organises for me to visit his storage unit in Perth. I'm wondering what is going to be on them. And also, there's a whole load of papers that I'm going to go through. So I'm kind of excited to know what's there. Also a little bit hesitant because I really don't know what we're getting into here. This story just keeps unfurling itself. There's just so many layers to what started off as a bit of a caper.
10:30 p.m. on the 20th of April, 1990.
Robin Thoy secretly records his superiors to protect himself against what he thinks are inside attempts to ruin his policing career. Not just once, he makes 9 secret tapes recording every meeting he has with his bosses about the Argyle diamond theft.
The matter is proceeding as planned. Now, I know it's causing waves. It's upset a lot of people. I don't know why. But
because of bloody resources that are going into it, what, you're asking for more resources.
What resources? So I've only had 2 men. Now I've only got 1.
Robin Thoy is asking his boss for extra resources to follow up leads to investigate the Argyle case. And he's secretly recording the conversation. At this moment, he's working solo on a multi-million dollar diamond theft with international ramifications. These secretly recorded conversations later become important exhibits in the Royal Commission into Corruption in the WA Police Force. We'll get to that later. I can see going through boxes of Robin Thoy's records that he painstakingly tried to build a picture of how Lindsay Rodden was connected to the diamond trade. Despite seemingly finding plenty of leads, he's instructed to wrap up his investigations.
Then he said, I want you to scrub it. I want you to kick a couple of doors in and write it off. Well, when you say that to a senior sergeant who's got a big inquiry, something's definitely very wrong.
Having listened, there's hours of tape of senior officers scuttling any leads Thoy has. Undeterred, Robin Thoy plugs on. Robin Thoy gets a lucky break when cocky Lindsay Rodden invites him out for coffee and his mouth runs away from him.
We had no idea that a security man was doing it until Rodden
after we interviewed him, rang me back and said, do you want a cup of coffee? And I said, yeah, I'll have a cup of coffee. He sat down and he said he was prepared to help us find out who did this.
Robin Thoy said Lindsay Rodden tried to lead him astray.
He said, oh, we knew a fellow by the name of, gave me the name and then said, you know, he got in the trouble with diamonds up there and et cetera, et cetera. And I just said, oh, yeah. And I didn't say anything else.
But in fact, he was giving a major tip-off that there was a leak at the mine. Robin Thoy decided to check these stories out with Argyle's head of security, Richard Corfield.
And said, this fella, got his name, what was the story on that? And he said, how in the heck did you know that? He said, nobody knows that except three or four in the whole of the Argyle Inquiry. And that's when I knew that a senior member of the team may be involved, security team, because he would have known, may be involved in the King of Diamonds.
Robin then started working through the list of Argyle security officers to check their backgrounds.
I found the nexus.
He made a connection between Lindsay Rodden and Argyle security officer Barry Crimmins.
I found that Rodden and Crimmins were good friends, very good friends.
And Robin, can you talk me through how did you find that out? What sort of police work did you do to find that link between the two?
It was a bit lucky, actually. I heard that Crimmins had a dog, a German Shepherd, which they were very fond of. So I rang the German Shepherd Club, spoke to the president, and he said, oh, yeah, Rodden and Crimmins, oh, yeah, they're good mates. They come here all the time. So there it was. Simple as that.
So it was Barry's pet dog that gave it away. A shared interest in German Shepherd breeding eventually unraveled their secret conspiracy. Argyle investigator Richard Corfield remembers how he reacted when he found out that the two, what he calls Alsatian dog fanciers, were connected.
He was a dog fancier, the Alsatian dogs. They had had dogs together and had never notified anybody. It was totally secret. And when Robin rang me, I could have opened the floor and pulled the roof over my head. You know, I said, yep, he's in this up to his neck. So then we started on Crimmins, started investigating his assets and his wife too.
You would think having discovered the nexus between Lindsay Rodden and an Argyle insider, Barry Crimmins, that would have put fire under the case. But it didn't. Robin Thoy is instructed to wrap it up by his superiors and to submit his final report. His wife, Pauline Thoy, told the ABC her husband was under enormous amounts of pressure.
They quite often told him that he'd lost the plot, that he should seek medical advice. And I believe they even told Argyle that he'd lost it and that he had no credibility. And whenever his name was mentioned throughout police force, if anybody mentioned his name to superior officers upstairs, I believe the current or the common reply was, yeah, forget Thoy, he's got no credibility.
Robin Thoy was accused of being paranoid and was instructed to see a psychiatrist. He did. He told me the pressure was coming at him from all sides. He felt undermined in his work as a police officer. He couldn't get traction on a major diamond theft with links to the criminal underworld. And to top it all off, he was receiving anonymous violent threats to his family. Before heading off on sick leave, he admitted to his superiors he'd been secretly recording them. While he was away, a filing cabinet in his office was broken into. Robin Thoy said some tapes left in the cabinet had gone missing. Argyle's chief investigator, Richard Corfield, saw the broken filing cabinet firsthand.
I went down there into this office, and there was the cabinet with the front of the lock hanging out and an empty locker. There were some empty files in there, that was all.
So Robin Thoy is getting violent threats against him and his family, and his filing cabinet is broken into. But Robin Thoy's superiors accused him of being overly suspicious. Robin Thoy told me he believes he was kicked off the case at this point because Lindsay Rodden had connections to high-ranking police.
But they should have been arrested. It was so clear. There's more than enough evidence to show that the three top guys were constantly in contact with Rodden. And the word was said that if you have a go at this guy, the police force will do anything to save him. So obviously he was very popular.
So why was Rodden so protected by some police officers?
I'll let you have a wild guess at that one. Money. He paid them, I'd say.
For more than a year, the diamond heist case went cold. This was obviously a problem for Argyle, the big diamond miner. So there was proof their unique pink diamonds had turned up unexplained in two different parts of the world. But the police claimed there was not enough evidence to point the finger at the chief suspect, Lindsay Rodden, or his contact at Argyle, Barry Crimmins. Dissatisfied, Argyle's chief investigator, Richard Corfield, organises to meet Assistant Police Commissioner Bruce Scott.
He was as strong as a skunk. I've never seen anybody quite like it, sitting upright. In fact, he couldn't. He kept leaning forward and he was dribbling and he's got his, you know, the red eyes and he kept slurring his voice. The pong of booze was coming across the desk at me. And at one point he said, "Oh, don't worry, Dick," he said, "one of these days I'll tell you what's really going." And Hancock grabbed him by the scruff of the neck and hauled him back into the upright position. He said, "Steady, boss."
So the head of Argyle Security says this police boss is telling him that there's a lot more to this diamond heist than meets the eye. But Bruce Scott denies it.
Never, ever have I been drunk doing my job. I was working as the deputy commissioner at the time. How would there be a deputy commissioner being drunk during interviews with members of the public? Unbelievable.
Unimpressed, Argyle amps up the pressure for the police to reopen the case. They go to the top. Richard Corfield already tried the assistant police commissioner. Now he goes above him to his boss.
I said, the managing director of Argyle Diamond wants to meet you and express what our concerns are. He said, "Yeah, sure. We put in an appointment and we fronted up and we talked through it. Some of the things." He was saying, I just can't believe that this is true. I said, "We are subject to constant threats of one sort or another. We are being surveilled."
So both the police investigating officer and the Argyle mine investigator were being followed.
I found somebody in a little ute following me down to my own wife's office, which went round the back lane. And this thing was a big one, and I parked where I could, and he couldn't. He had to back out. So I thought, that's two hefty-looking blokes. So I noted the number down. I rang police headquarters. He said, "Oh, what you doing with that number?" I said, "It was following me." Oh, I said, "It's probably routine surveillance. It's one of ours."
So the police were surveying you?
Yeah.
Richard Corfield's concerns were heard. The case was reopened. But there's a catch. A new cop is put in charge. Let's don the Deerstalker hat here again to bring you up to speed with the facts at hand. At this stage, Argyle's been trying to solve the case of the stolen diamonds for more than 2 years. During that time, police officer Robin Thoy works on the case, but it soon gets shut down. The police let the case go cold for a year. But when the second investigation starts, the man put in charge was a police officer with a blotted copybook. His name, Senior Sergeant Geoffrey Noy. Now, the name stuff is important because it gets confusing. Any of the journos I've interviewed about Argyle said the only way they could remember it was Thoy, good cop, Noy, bad cop. This is the stage in the Argyle case where the nexus between the police and the criminals become tighter. Senior Sergeant Geoffrey Noy concludes there's insufficient evidence against Lindsay Rodden. He doesn't even interview Barry Crimmins or Swiss gem dealer Teddy Horowitz. The cop actually visits Barry Crimmins while on leave, but not to interview him. While investigating, Senior Sergeant Geoffrey Noy is spotted by a number of people around Perth City, lunching and drinking with the main suspect in the case, Lindsay Rodden. The Royal Commission heard evidence of this from a journalist who testified. Lynette, Barry Crimmins' wife, later gave evidence to the Royal Commission that Geoffrey Noy was paid off by Lindsay Rodden. The Royal Commission found, at the very least, Geoffrey Noy formed an inappropriate relationship with Rodden that compromised the investigation. The commissioner concluded the behaviour was not what you would expect of an honest, experienced and competent detective. Senior Sergeant Geoffrey Noy ends up being charged with conspiracy to pervert the course of justice along with Rodden. But these charges against them are dropped. The pair remain friends for years. It seemed like the heist trio had gotten away with it. 4 years after Barry first stole Argyle Diamonds, he's escaped WA and moved home to Victoria. He must have been thinking he'd got away scot-free. But his ex-wife is about to blow the whole thing up.
Barry Anthony Crimmins and his ex-wife Lynette Beryl Crimmins have pleaded guilty to conspiring to steal Argyle Diamonds. The court heard that Barry Crimmins, a former Victorian policeman, was a security officer in Argyle's Kimberley diamond mine. Mr. Crimmins says he stole diamonds from the mine and gave them to former racehorse owner Lindsay Rodden in exchange for cash. The court also heard of the alleged involvement of Sergeant Geoffrey Noy and an earlier fruitless diamond-stealing investigation. Mr. Redman said Mrs. Crimmins had had enough by early 1993 and contacted the authorities, even though there was no risk of being caught. The investigation had been closed. They were home free.
The pink diamond heist fell apart when Lynette Crimmins confessed all to the police and brought down her ex-husband and former lover.
And she spilled the whole message to there, which was probably the best thing that ever happened to the Argyle inquiry, because she knew a lot, a real lot.
Lynette not only took Lindsay Rodden and Barry down with her, she also threw shade on the police force. It was Lynette's recollections of the people she met with Lindsay Rodden that was even more explosive than the millions of dollars of diamonds stolen. Her memories would implicate high-ranking officers in the WA police.
She became a very vocal witness. She suffered from, according to rumour, and I don't know, but the coppers swore that she had a mental condition that enabled her to have a complete memory of everything that ever happened. Some of it I would not tell you because I have no evidence at all, but it involves very senior people.
Lynette told the Royal Commission that Lindsay Rodden on numerous occasions boasted he could call on senior police officers for assistance. She said he'd refer to officers by nicknames. It was Uncle Max and the boys and Zed, Kim, Bernie, Barney and Barnsey. It was her understanding these were references to top brass. Lynette's allegations received an airing on ABC's Four Corners, and as a consequence, a private Victorian investigative firm approached Argyle to review the case. Remember, this isn't about the culprits anymore. The Diamond Trio have already been charged and both of the Crimmins have pled guilty. It's 6 years since Barry has taken the diamonds. Argyle decides to have one more crack at getting them back and hires a private investigator.
I'm Calvin Glare, known as Cal. I was a member of the Victoria Police for over 35 years and for the last 5 years I was Chief Commissioner.
So now you have the former boss of the Victorian Police Force being privately contracted to look into this whole mess. Lynette, Barry and Rodden have all been charged with conspiracy to steal diamonds. Remember, these stolen diamonds are estimated to be worth up to $50 million. Argyle tasked him with interrogating two things, the police investigations and their own mine security.
Their security wasn't anywhere near as good as they thought it was, unfortunately.
He starts by looking at the diamond mine in the Kimberley of WA.
Each of the 3 days I was there, I went into the area where the diamonds were being produced and sorted. Each time I carried a briefcase out, and not once did anyone open the briefcase, and yet I had been inside with the head of security picking up uncut diamonds off the floor and putting them back in the hopper. I was told that security there is very tight, and I looked up and I saw a big truck rumble in, rumble around the place and rumble out again with no one checking it. And when I asked, you know, they said, oh, that's the garbage truck. And I said, well, why isn't that checked? Because someone puts a bag of alluvial diamonds in a rubbish bin and it can be collected, taken out of the rubbish and no one's any the wiser. I also found that the system had recorded me as being in the plant overnight, which of course I wasn't, I was tucked up in bed. So there needed to be quite substantial tightening of the security.
Kelglare's investigation takes him down what by now is a well-trodden path for investigators in the Argyll case. He heads to Europe to sniff out the trail of the stolen diamonds. This leads him to speak to diamond merchants in Antwerp, Geneva, London and Paris. But he found the international diamond trade was a very closed shop all round.
Yes, we ended up in Geneva. Very suave fellow there who made it very clear that he was not one bit concerned about the origins of any diamonds. If they were at the right price, he was a buyer and seller, a trader. And that seemed to be the attitude of anyone involved in the diamond trade. No one was too concerned about the provenance of diamonds. They were just concerned about whether they could make a dollar out of them.
For the pink diamond heist to be successful, our thieves needed to be able to sell their loot. And as Kel found out, the diamond merchants of Europe were more than happy to be left in the dark as to the source of the Argyll pink diamonds.
They gave nothing away, they would admit nothing. It was very much a complete stone wall, but it did become very obvious that they were not concerned about the origins of diamonds.
Kelglare didn't manage to retrieve any stolen Argyll diamonds from Europe. But back in Australia, he put the WA police investigations under the microscope and found them lacking. He spoke to police officers involved in the investigation, including Robin Foy, our whistleblower who made the secret tapes.
He was treated very poorly. He really hadn't been given the opportunity to do what he felt he should do as a sworn police officer. In the hierarchy of the West Australian Police, an unwillingness of people to accept that responsibility at the upper levels. And, of course, you know, the buck stops at the top.
Although it was an extraordinary step for Robin Thoy to covertly record his police colleagues, this former head of Victorian Police told me it was justified.
I think he was wise to take any protective steps that he thought necessary. He obviously felt uncomfortable and, yes, I think that was both warranted and sensible.
Transcripts of Robin Thoy's tapes were tabled more than a decade later at the Royal Commission into WA Police. But the Commission found it was impossible to conclude that the tape-recorded conversations were evidence that corrupt attempts had been made to terminate the Argyll investigation.
The Commission found no evidence of any impropriety. It also dismissed allegations of improper interference in the investigation into the theft of Argyll diamonds. The evidence does not establish the existence of a corrupt conspiracy by senior officers. Instead, the Commission found once again that extremely poor management within the service led to the case dragging on for 13 years.
I hadn't a clue how serious this story would become when I first heard about a random parcel of stolen diamonds being marketed to a Perth jeweller.
That was through an email. We just got an email. So every year there's an Argyll tender for the pink and blue diamonds.
So why did these diamonds turn up now?
That network received an email from Argyll stating that due to the process of closing down the mine, that they had found this parcel of diamonds, these uncut diamonds that had come from an era of a mixed, you know, bit of a mixed bag background in terms of the fact that they had been stolen.
Anyone who squirreled away one of these stolen pink diamonds is sitting on a little fortune. So where did our heist diamonds end up? Where are the jewels now? That's next time on Pink Diamond Heist. If you're enjoying this podcast, let your friends know about it. This podcast is hosted, researched and reported by me, Sinead Mangan. Sarah Allely is the producer. Sound design and engineering by Adrian Sardi. And our executive producer is Edwina Farley. The podcast was recorded on the lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people. You can follow Pink Diamond Heist on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.